Welcome everyone to a new episode of The Tap. I'm your host, author Andrew Hess.
And I'm Justin DeFrancisco. What do we got on tap for today, Andrew?
It's our favorite day of the week. SmackDown and Raw.
That hurts a little bit every time you say that.
Oh God. It's just
It's getting worse. I don't know if it's because AEW is consistently like firing like it's some of its best shows like lately with all of its new signings and stuff, but I just, God, it hurts to watch a lot of this.
See, well, here's the thing for me is, I mean, SmackDown had actually a couple of good moments.
Yeah, there's a couple.
But then you have a couple that are just like, ugh. And it's the same thing with Raw. So, I mean, we'll just jump straight into it because there's really no easy way of kind of getting into it. It's just you kind of have to. It's the same thing. It's just kind of like, you know, you just got to go in there and take it, you know.
Yeah. Yep. That's what she said.
Basically, we have to be like, you know, the good little sub in that, and just be like, you know, just sit there and take it, and you know, and watch it, because that's what we wind up doing in order to relay the information over to you guys.
Isn't this crazy? I'll let you do the rundown, but isn't this crazy that
I'm not even doing the damn rundowns anymore.
No, but
man,
whatever you want to talk about, whatever we're talking about. But I just wanted to say that isn't it funny how most other people that review shows have to nitpick stuff to find wrong with it? We have to nitpick SmackDown and Raw to find the couple good things that are in it out of the sea of garbage. So this is really where a review show comes in handy. Most of those other shows where everyone's like, yeah, hey, let's talk about, you know, The Walking Dead after The Walking Dead. No, no, no. You don't need to. This you need to. This is horrible. All right. So let's
pretty much. All right. So we're going to just jump straight into the SmackDown side of things. First off, what I actually, I had several notes about the opening segment with Roman Reigns, the Usos, and then Brock Lesnar. So first off, you have Roman Reigns come out there, and you got to love the New York crowd, because Madison Square Garden was actually cheering Roman Reigns. Like they were cheering for him, like as if he was the top baby face of the company. Like that's how hard they were cheering for him. Yep. And I was just like, wow, dude. I'm like, that's so funny, because just like when he was the top baby face, he was one of the most booed people. And now like he's one of the top like people getting cheered. On at least when he comes to, you know, to New York, and he's supposed to be the top heel of the company instead.
Yeah.
So that part I just found amusing right off the bat. Then I love how I love how basically Brock Lesnar comes out there, and he just kind of like stands there for a minute, and Paul Heyman tries to be like, you know, like what is it, you know, that you want, like type of thing. And Lesnar just with one line just destroys Paul Heyman, and basically be like, Paul, why didn't you tell him I was going to be there for SummerSlam?
Yeah.
And you just, the whole crowd just erupts over this. You have Roman, who just literally just rips the Universal title out of Paul Heyman's hands. And then like the entire bloodline just walks away. And at the same time with all of this, the fans are going on so much at Paul Heyman saying you effed up, that WWE had to like completely censor everything, because like there was no sound for a good like solid minute or so, because the fans kept chanting you effed up.
The one thing I've enjoyed those Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar storylines seem to be the only stories that they really like to take care of. So what's really interesting is like the subtleties that they do, that they've been doing in the storyline, like Brock Lesnar. Like Paul Heyman has Brock Lesnar's like theme song as as
the ringtone.
Yeah. Like just little things like that, that are like just enough to make you think, oh wait, is this a plan on Roman Reigns, or is this you know, just Brock Lesnar messing with everybody?
Oh, you know that it was Brock Lesnar messing with everybody, and that's what I love.
But it was, yeah, it's great. I love this babyface Brock. Like, I kept saying,
and that's what I kept telling people. I'm like, dude, I'm like, I'm actually looking forward to seeing what babyface Brock will be like, because, and yeah, you and I had the conversation, because you're like, oh, he can't be babyface Brock because babyface Brock, like, he's a monster. He's got to destroy people.
Yeah. And then go away for 3 more months and right, then come back. Yeah.
But babyface Brock is killing it right now. I mean, yeah, he's not making that many appearances, but the subtleties that they're doing, I mean, the dude looks jacked.
Yeah. And like, he can actually, like, I mean, he's no Paul Heyman or anything, or even like John Cena, but I mean, Brock Lesnar can actually talk. Like, they never let him speak, but like, yeah, if anyone remembers back, like, when he was like UFC world champion, he had a real shoot promo after he beat Randy Couture for the heavyweight title. Yeah, where he was like, I'm going to go home and drink some Coors Light because Bud Light don't pay me nothing.
Yep.
You know, that was one of the best things. I still remember that line from that promo, and it's not even, it's a shoot, like, legit, like, interview, like, and it was awesome with Joe Rogan after the match. But yeah, so he's great. I this is one of the few bright spots of SmackDown. It's the only thing that really keeps me watching it.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, there was a couple of good moments, and then obviously Lesnar actually goes, what I liked was Paul Heyman then tried to change this after the Bloodline abandoned him. Paul Heyman tries to go into the whole, like, you know, the same routine of like, my name is Paul Heyman and I have been the advocate for Brock Lesnar. And, and then Brock's just like, yeah, it's like good, you know, it's just like old times, feels good. And he goes to F5 Paul Heyman, and then Roman goes, gives him the Superman punch. The Usos getting in the mat involved, and then Lesnar just destroys the Usos.
Oh man,
I love that. That actually had me excited. I'm like, wow. I'm like, maybe we'll actually get a good SmackDown for once. I'm like, this would be awesome. I'm like, you started it off on the right foot. You know,
they just let you down hard.
Well, I mean, you have a random 10-man tag that made absolutely no sense. This was just like, really just, it wasn't like a horrible match, but it's just like, why are you putting these 10 men in a tag team match against each other? It makes absolutely no sense at this point.
Yeah. I feel like their WWE's like 10 man tags and 8 man tags never make a single lick of sense.
I mean, here's the thing. The one from Raw last night with the 8 man tag kind of made sense.
Oh yeah. The leader of Retribution, facing the members of Retribution and acting like that they don't even know each other.
Well, no, they've already played on off of that, because Mansoor and Ali, and I'm not trying to get too off topic at this point, but yeah, Mansoor and Ali had teamed up, and they had basically just demolished Mansoor during against Mason T-Bar had just destroyed Mansoor, and then they cornered Ali, and Ali was trying to be like, yo, like, Retribution, remember? And they're like, oh yeah, 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 and then they destroyed Ali.
To be fair, I'm pretty sure that was on the part of Mustafa Ali and Dominic Dijakovic, or Dijak. God, please, why couldn't you leave his name as Dijak? That's a cooler name.
Yeah, that,
like, would, God, it just bothers me, probably because that's his indie name, Dijak, and they don't want to give it him his indie name. Probably. He didn't want to use it, because then he wouldn't be able to use it later. But anyway, probably. Regardless, we'll get back on topic. But the only thing is that was on their part, not on WWE's part. Do not give WWE the credit for the storytelling, because anything that happens in the ring off microphone like that is something that the wrestlers come up with themselves.
It very well be. But the thing is, for that is, like, it established that there was no connection for them anymore. Sense.
Yes, right. I understand. I get your point made.
But it made more sense. What I was trying to say about the 8-man tag from last night making more sense was in the fact that you actually had Mace and T-Bar were the ones who destroyed the New Day and Ali and Mansoor last week in the tag team turmoil match, and then AJ Styles and Omos were the ones who beat the New Day to advance. So it made sense for those two teams to tag up against the New Day and Ali and Mansoor. So it made a little bit more sense, at least. And it's not something that was being just done and driven like 50 million times over. It was something where it made somewhat sense to have that 8-man tag.
Yes.
As opposed to SmackDown, where you had a 10-man tag of just literally 5-on-5 of people just thrown together in a match that really have not. People. Yeah. I mean,
some of which were feuding, some of which you used to feud, but
some of which have been just feuding for like forever.
Some of which who don't like the people they're tagging with, you know, whatever. There's tons right. of issues.
The next thing when it came to SmackDown, because I'm not even going to give any more time for that.
Move on.
The next thing that I have was Becky Lynch's heat of her trying to be a heel. And I'm not going to lie, I feel like her heel heat is more of like that go away heel heat now.
I was just going to say, you know what? I don't like Becky Lynch right now, but not because she's being a good heel, because I actually want her to get off my TV screen.
Yeah. Like I just, I'm like, I, she's not,
she's trying too hard.
She needs to try to be the way she was, like when it came to Austin.
Okay. Yeah, and she's naturally like nice. Yeah, but she needs to have an attitude, but still be who she is.
Right.
Like exactly this whole, like Austin.
Right. This whole like cowardly crap where it's just like, oh, I'm not gonna wrestle you, and I would have possibly given her match tonight, but now that I'm being forced to, and then she's like, what if I don't sign the contract? What if I don't sign it? Well, bitch, you're freaking a contracted wrestler. Either you sign the contract and do the fight, or you get stripped of the title. That's what I would have turned around and said.
Exactly. Also. Like, what was I gonna say? It really doesn't make sense. It's not believable. Like, she looks like she's acting bad.
She looks like she's trying way too hard to try to be a heel.
And also, if nobody remembers, but right before she went away, we were all starting to get really tired of her. Because we were tired of her coming out in the yellow and black leather jacket every week and being like, yeah, ha 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 ha, ha, I'm the man, you know. But that was
actually what else impression. Are
you? Yeah. I know. hey, it's I'm from that part of the world. At least my family is. So exactly. It just doesn't make any real kind of sense for her to be a heel or anything like that. It's just not believable for her. It's boring now, because I mean, I was kind of getting bored of the man gimmick, because literally all she says is I'm the man, and then she can't even really say that now and make it mean anything, because she's literally being a coward right now. So she's literally a scared little girl right now. She's the opposite of a man.
On the opposite side of this coin when it comes to that whole promo, I mean, Bianca, I give her credit. She actually had a pretty good promo prior to Becky coming out. And she was so welcomed by the New York crowd.
Yeah.
Like, she was so cheered. And I was good to see that, because I actually was just like, you know what? That feels good that
New York people appreciate hard work.
Right. and well, that's the thing, is like, New Yorkers are all hard workers to begin with, you know? Yeah. So they appreciate hard work, and they don't really go with whatever the mainstream tries to force you to
feel. Yeah, they let you know how they feel. That's it.
Right. So I like that they showed the respect and showed, you know, Bianca some gratitude and kind of cheering her on, giving her the welcome that she deserved. I mean, obviously, New York crowd kind of respects Bianca more than what I feel like WWE did when it came to her championship reign. But, you know, that's my opinion. I feel like that they devalued the Bianca as champion. when it came to
devalued the championship.
Yeah,
if that was even possible. When
you, and I and I've said it multiple. Well, I've said it multiple times. I mean, when you have your champion chasing the challengers,
that's a problem.
That's an issue with your storylines right there. Your champion should not be. If you want to have a champion who's sitting there and be like, "I got an open challenge." That's one
thing. Or even somebody who's like, you know, the one person that like attacks them, you know, that they used to be friends with or a tag partner with or something like that. And then that turns
right
into some feud where they're trying to get a match with them. That's okay, because that's story driven. That makes sense. It's not necessarily about the title.
Right.
But when you're literally going, into no story.
Well, it's not even no story, but you've beaten the person already.
They're not credible to begin with, and they
sit there and they make one little comment about you and you're like, I'm coming out there and I want a match. And it's like, I want a match with her. Give me a match with her.
Yeah.
Oh, well, you want a match with me. Oh, let me think if I want to accept that match. And you know, it's going to be for the title. Yeah. I'll put my title on the line. I want a match with you. To do that multiple times for multiple people.
Yeah, there's like in a row. Problem. Yeah.
There's a big problem there.
And I just want to say back on to the promo itself is I kind of feel like in this feud in general that she's just the filler. She's just a placeholder. She's the background. She's the border in your YouTube video.
And here's
like nothing.
And here's the thing that it's going to boil down to, because I can already see the writing on the wall when it comes to WWE. Is they're going to have this match and Bianca they're actually going to have a good match. The problem being is that you're going to end up having some sort of count out or DQ victory. It's not going to end with an actual pin or submission. It's going to be some sort of count out or DQ victory. That's then going to prolong this feud a little bit longer until another pay-per-view, because we're in September right now. So the next pay-per-view, they would have the blow off match, being in October, and then November, which you have Survivor
Series. Extreme Rules. Yeah, I think that's Extreme Rules is the next pay-per-view.
No, well, that's what I'm saying. Extreme Rules is their next one. That's the one I'm saying is going to be either.
No, I know that's the blow off, and then there. But the thing is, Survivor Series, they're gonna have champion versus champion.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Extreme Rules is the next one that's coming up in 2 weeks. That's going to be where it ends in either count out or DQ.
Then you're talking after Survivor Series, the following pay-per-view.
No, Survivor Series is November. You still have October to get through. So October is going to have another pay-per-view. That's where they're going to have their blow-off match.
That's ridiculous.
Then you're going to have that Survivor Series champion versus champion BS that they keep.
I'm sorry. No, they might not, because if Extreme Rules is in 2 weeks. October, today's the 14th of September. If it's in 2 weeks, it'll be almost the end of September. You're telling me, no, because I'm pretty sure they moved Survivor Series to like end of October now. I'm pretty sure it's not even in November anymore.
No, it's always in November. I'll look it up right now.
All right. But while you're doing that quickly, I just wanted to say, because it's something that we will talk about and move on to while we're talking about the women's division and Survivor Series, is I can't wait till we get on to Raw, because I told you one of my favorite things about Raw is Alexa Bliss being in the title picture right now, because I think she's going to win too. As much as I feel like Charlotte versus Becky is a great Survivor Series match. Well, yeah, because they're really slow building Alexa Bliss. So, they're slow building it.
So here's where it all boils down to. So first off, Sunday, November 21st is Survivor Series for this year.
Okay. That's right before my birthday and Thanksgiving.
There you go. We're going to end up with that.
So there is another pay-per-view. Okay, I thought it was at the beginning of November too.
It's always right before Thanksgiving.
Okay. So no, that makes sense then.
So that's how it's going to be. Becky Lynch.
They might not though, because this is actually normally when they do their Saudi show, is in between Extreme Rules and Survivor Series, and I don't think that they're able to do it.
They are doing the Saudi show this year.
Okay, so that's probably going to be the one that's in October then, because
they'll probably have two.
They do normally have two, but I'm saying that'll be like the one for this year, and then they normally have another one that's like before.
I'm saying they'll probably have two events in October.
Jesus. Come on.
Because the Saudi show, well, the Saudi show is always during the week. It's never on the weekend.
Yeah, that's true. Man.
So that's why
they
I'm saying.
They need to cut their pay-per-views in half.
Well, this
that's a story for a different topic. That's a different day.
I was about to say, you're about to send me down a rabbit hole on that one.
That's a different day.
Yeah.
Next Monday show, we'll talk about that.
Pretty much. Going back to what I was going to say, though, is it's I feel like that they're going to use the Charlotte Becky match to be there. So they're in Survivor Series to get people to buy in for Survivor Series.
I might get some heat for this, but I don't really like Becky's wrestling. She's not a bad wrestler or anything. It just doesn't particularly excite me. She's like literally female Seth Rollins, which makes sense. Where like, you're like, yeah, they have a lot of skill and they're really good at wrestling, but they wrestle in the WWE style. So like to the letter that it's so boring. And it's like, there's like pauses in between every setup to every move. And it's like, they even got to, you know, take a little Mario hop in the air before they run to the corner and like all stuff where it's like, it's all telegraphed. You all know it's coming like a mile away.
Well, I'm glad you actually had mentioned Seth Rollins, because that's actually where I was going next with my with my rundown. Yeah. So we had Seth Rollins versus Edge, a rematch from SummerSlam. A couple of things. First off, the match was really good. That was obviously the best match of the night.
Depends on who Rollins is with, really, is what makes him have a good match. I feel like he has the ability always, but it's just, it depends who brings it out of him.
Yeah. I mean, look at when he took on Dean Ambrose.
I'll never forget that.
That was a horrible one. But any which way, the match itself was good. The things that I hated about it was, first off, they didn't even show Edge's entrance. They didn't even show it on TV.
And that's one of like the biggest pops people get during entrances is Edge's entrance, especially because they love the song too.
Yeah. And they did nothing for it. They didn't even show it. And I'm like, they literally come back from like whatever thing that they were showing. I don't remember. I think it was like the children pediatric cancer.
Might have been Connor's Cure.
I think that they were showing that, but then they come back and it's just like Edge is in the ring ready for his match. And like, he's just kind of like hanging out in the corner. And then it's just like, okay, the camera's on. He's like, oh, hey, let's get the crowd going.
Yeah.
And I'm just like,
dude, they're like, really? They're like, oh, we're live, pal. Okay. We got to get up.
Yeah. Everybody. Get the crowd riled up. Let's go.
It's like, that reminds me of that, that during pandemic era match with like Sasha and Bayley, where they just like stopped wrestling and just like sat on the mat, like in between commercial, because they weren't filming for commercial. Like they didn't have a picture in picture. And then like coming back from, but people like on the UK feed and stuff, like on Fight TV and stuff, could see that they were just sitting there, because it stays live with the camera the whole time on those feeds. So, it just reminds me of that, where it's like they're like sitting down, like they're having a normal day. And then as soon as the camera's about to be turned back on, hey, hey.
Exactly. And then here's my other like drawback of this whole match. So you have the ending of it where Seth Rollins, he kicks Edge a couple times in the face, and then he hits the curb stomp, and they're like, Edge isn't moving. Edge hasn't moved at all. And Rollins is like, kind of just like, he's like, oh my God, like, what did I do? And he's like, even backstage, like they bring out the fake EMTs to go and put Edge on the stretcher. They wheel him out, put him in an ambulance. They come back from break.
Yeah.
The ambulance takes off, and Rollins is just standing there, and he's just like, I don't know how to feel. He's like, they're like, are you okay? Like, you know, how do you, I don't know. I don't know how I feel. How do you feel about it? And I'm like, how do you feel about it? She's a fucking interviewer.
She
is, sorry for my language, but
she's random interviewer number 7.
Yeah.
And she doesn't care. They gave her a piece of paper 10 seconds before she stood next to you, and she asked you the question that they obligatorily told her to ask. She doesn't even know what the response is supposed to be, nor does she even care. No,
but I'm
she's
just supposed like
to smile.
But I'm just like, this whole thing just like was just so ridiculous. Okay, so because he took a curb stomp to the back for his head. Not his neck, his head. He's now all of a sudden he can't go ahead and he can't move at all.
Carried away by 250-pound EMTs.
That yeah, and I mean
have muscles.
And I mean not for nothing, but he's been taking suplexes and you know superplexes and all these other different types of moves. But one curb stomp was enough to go ahead and do it. That's enough to go ahead and make Edge get put back on the shelf again, which means you know he's not coming back again until probably Royal Rumble.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just like, I'm so sick of this. Look, Edge is there every week when it came to doing like to further the storylines, but now he's going to be away for a while. And I'm like, this was the dumbest way for them to have done it. If you wanted to do it, like have Rollins just like snap and like, really go to town on like on Edge during that match,
and they and easily really could have. He's been doing that,
right?
Like he's and been then, doing stuff like that, you know.
And then you could have been like after he snapped, like he went into that dark place type of thing, like that they were saying for Edge, like have him go into that dark place. He goes like and takes it like way too far, and then he's just like, "Oh no, what did I do?" One curb stomp. I mean, come on, that's yeah. ridiculous. Let's be real. I'm all for the art of storytelling. I can, even when it comes to WWE's corny BS that they put out there, but try to make it at least somewhat realistic, at least somewhat, because yeah. it makes no sense whatsoever.
I agree. I totally agree.
Now I want to just call to the end of the show. Because honestly, I really didn't care about Usos versus Street Profits because obviously we knew that the Usos were going to somehow retain the titles.
And we've already seen that match 8 times.
Exactly. So I didn't care about that. What I like was that Roman Reigns, they cut back from break and Roman Reigns is on the microphone. He accepts Brock Lesnar's challenge, you know, to fight him. But he said first he's got to go through Finn Balor. He's going to beat Finn Balor, and out comes Finn Balor, the demon. Finn Balor.
And I had such a problem with this.
And I liked the initial entrance, but then like he gets like halfway down the ramp. He takes off the headdress piece and just runs in the ring, stares down Roman, and then nothing happens. You cut off the air before anything happens. This was just a horrible way to end the show.
Yeah.
You built it up where it's just like, all right, awesome. We got Demon Finn Balor. And then nothing happens.
Yeah, this is like worse than them not having like him on the show at all. Because in this way, you're like expecting something to happen and then absolutely nothing happens. Also, the Demon is a special once in a while character.
Mm-hmm.
It is not something like after Mankind was like comfortably Mankind in WWE and then brought back Cactus Jack for a brief stint, or, you know, Dude Love for a brief stint, you know, it's a special character. You cannot have it just randomly on your SmackDown, and you can't just have him show up and not do anything.
Here's the thing for me on this.
He's supposed to be supernatural. Like he should just be able to annihilate Roman in like 2 seconds and just take the title and eat it.
Here's my thing is last week they had the red light. They should have capitalized a little bit more on that. And they could have done where it's just like they start doing like the smoke and everything like that. You know, like remember how like the Undertaker used to play mind games with people?
Yeah.
Like way back in the day.
Yep.
Like the
one of the shows I went to, he poured blood on somebody, like from the rafters, like he didn't. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But yeah,
you could do the blood
on people,
right? The lights would flicker, the gong would go off
behind him.
You could do, you could have done something like that, and like what I would have said is like they could have done like the smoke they could around have
built
the
this way without without Finn Balor showing up or saying well, a
this
word.
This is what I was gonna go with. Yeah. So they could have had, you know, Roman say that smoke fills like the lights go out. The red light kind of hits the stage. You see like the red smoke filling around the ring, and then you just see the eyes right on the like the Titantron type thing. Yep. You just see the demon eyes just right there on the screen. Nothing else. You don't see show anything else of Finn Balor. Just the eyes watching them.
Yeah,
that would have been a much better way to have ended the show. And then next week, you could have had it where it's like going to be something similar. Have the eyes pop up again, but only this time the lights cut on and Finn Balor is in the ring as the demon and just destroys all three guys.
Yeah, well,
that would have been great.
That would be much better. My perfect way to book this and obviously fantasy booking, but it's realistic fantasy booking. They could easily have done this, but they just didn't. Is like the heartbeat at the end of last week and the red lights. They could have done slightly more, a few more heartbeats this week. Mm-hmm. Just like that. They could have built all the way to a match at Extreme Rules without you even ever seeing the demon or him ever speaking. And just whenever Roman's in the ring or around, something happens, there's some kind of sound, the lights flicker, something so simple and easy. And it would have made it feel so much more special. Yep. And it would have made it just, it would have literally built itself, because the speculation around, oh, is the demon actually going to beat Roman Reigns? Because now that you've already shown the demon on SmackDown this week and done absolutely nothing with him, now everybody's like, yeah, well, there's just going to be another Roman squash. Yeah, it's going to be a nice, yep, like 12-minute match probably, and then he's just going to beat him. That's it.
Yep, that's exactly. Yep. That's exactly what it's going to be. We all know it.
No more, no less.
That's yeah. It. We all know it. There's nothing to it other than that. All right, let's kind of switch gears, go into Monday Night Raw really quick.
Yep.
All right, so you had your opening, and I understand that they were trying to build for Big E to be like teasing the cash in on the Money in the,
yeah,
Bank. But I felt like because of that and the back and forth between Orton and MVP and Big E and Lashley and Riddle being there, it just became way too confusing when it came to who's speaking, who's like, you know, who am I supposed to be caring about at this moment? Like, I just didn't care.
All right. I have a question for you about this, and I have just like sort of a statement. First, I'll go with the statement, which is that if there's any indication that nobody gave a crap that Big E had the Money in the Bank and that WWE doesn't listen to their fans, who was the most over person in this segment? It was easily Randy Orton.
Oh, absolutely.
Easily. They were chanting Randy, Randy, and you could tell that they were hoping that the crowd was going to be cheering Big E when he said that he was cashed in, because even MVP, also there's these things I notice every time Randy Orton's in the ring. Randy Orton talks in the ring all the time when the mic's down, and he tells people what to say, gives them their cues. This is why people say Randy Orton's like one of the smartest, like in ring IQ wrestlers that there is, because he just, I watch because him he say gets these it little now things. Yeah. Oh, he's so good. He tells MVP when they start chanting Randy, he's like, ah, no, that's not right. Something like that, he says. And then MVP tries to swing it, does a pretty good job and tries to swing it back over to Big E. But if there was any indication that if you were going to switch the title on to somebody, it should have been Randy Orton. This was it. Yeah. Because Randy's actually really over right now. And it's not even just like RK-Bro. Like, Randy is doing like some of his best. Like, I'm more interested in Randy than I've been in years. And that's the truth. Also, my question for you is, do you think that this was a rush cash in based off all based off the based off the AEW beating them in the in the demo last week.
I feel like it's completely because of that. I think that it was definitely done to try to boost some of the ratings and try to get fans interested in watching the show again. I definitely think it was rushed also because you've been sitting here teasing Big E to win, you know, to cash in on Roman. Right. Yeah. He's been teasing that for like since he basically won the Money in the Bank briefcase. He's been teasing that he's going to cash in on Roman. And then literally just a couple of hours before Monday Night Raw, he tweets out that he's promising that he's going to cash in on the WWE title tonight. So it's obvious that they changed. It's obvious that they had just changed direction at that point. And then from what I was reading, they're like, oh, well, you know, the word going around was that he was actually supposed to cash in on the draft night on Monday Night Raw and win the title. But I'm like,
they pushed it up.
Yeah, but they pushed it up. And I'm like, well, obviously if they pushed it up and they switched it on to the WWE title, or you know, maybe he was supposed to win the WWE title this whole time, who knows? But I'm like, not for nothing, but you kind of just, you killed any kind of other momentum. Like there was no buildup. You had a couple of hours to like try to get people interested in watching your show.
He already wasn't doing anything. Here's quickly, we'll move on from the opening segment after this, unless you would like to say anything else. But Big E, I feel like the only way to like save this and make me even kind of interested in this is if he turns on the New Day. I don't think the New Day should turn on him. I think the New Day is fine as a two-person tag team with Kofi and Woods as a babyface team. I think that's perfectly fine. I think Big E needs to change more than anybody, especially being WWE champion. Like they were talking about this in the ring, like during the opening segment promos, and it's like it's true. It's absolutely true. Like he needs to get away from the pancake flipping and all that, because they tried to do that and put him on SmackDown and they put him right back on Raw with the New Day.
Do you want to hear what I think should happen?
What?
I think honestly, it should end up being where Bobby Lashley, Big E, they have another match. You have obviously Big E getting the win. MVP feeling very like proud that Big E was able to do it. And you have Big E join with MVP and Bobby Lashley.
Oh, I thought you were going to say next week they just have Bobby Lashley win the title back.
No.
Well, forget that this never happened.
No, I think they need to, I agree with you that they need to turn him heel and turn him heel against the New Day, but have it where MVP was like in his ear to do it. And MVP now represents
that wouldn't work that way. That wouldn't work that way. It would have to be him turning on Bobby Lashley. MVP would have to turn on Bobby Lashley. No, because listen, this is where your plan falls apart and it makes no sense. Proud, almighty WWE champion Bobby Lashley is going to take a loss to Big E and then just let him be friends and be in the group.
Who said anything about being friends?
You said that he joins them.
I didn't say they be friends.
But he joins them.
I say MVP ends up representing him. They do join together.
Which is going to cause a Lashley turn within 2 weeks. And then... Yes, it
you
will.
Build you listen to me.
Go
you
ahead.
Build up the tension.
Yeah.
In that ability of like Big E and Bobby Lashley. You build it up. You build it up. Like they are on the same page, but it eats at Bobby Lashley that he lost to Big E.
Oh, you mean the remake of the Hurt Business storyline from last year with Alexander and you know, Shelton Benjamin, are they going to win the tag titles too?
No.
And then 3 months later, are we going to not care about them? And then they're going to feud for a week and then neither.
No, but my money's on that. They're going to, that my money's already on Lashley and MVP winning the tag team titles from RK-Bro.
Especially, actually now that he lost the title. Yeah. That he lost the world title. Yeah.
I'm telling you, this is the way I kind of see it. And I could be wrong. Like,
I don't disagree with it.
I think that and I'm not saying it has to happen right now. I'm saying that you start building towards it. MVP getting inside of Big E's head. He gets him away from the New Day into MVP representing him. Bobby Lashley's not okay with it at first. They try to like salvage it together, put it together, because it's just like, look, we got the WWE champion back in our graces. You know, we got him on our side. Well, let's do it. And then Bobby Lashley, it just eats at him until he becomes an even bigger monster at this point and just destroys them. And either he goes off as a monster babyface, or he goes as a monster heel. Either way, yeah, will wind up working. But this is the way I'm kind of, I would predict
Big E
it
just
to go.
Needs the change.
He does.
Like, I'm okay with that as long as it gives a change for Big E. So that's fine. Let's move on to whatever your next topic is.
My next topic is actually the one you wanted to talk about, Charlotte and Alexa.
Okay. So I saw a lot of people online, just because there was a doll involved, that they didn't like it. But I thought the promos themselves, if you forget the fact that it was all over a stupid Charlotte Flair doll, it was a great segment, actually. I think Alexa Bliss is perfect as this character. Even the little kid like wave that she does to the crowd, they pop so hard for that. Mm-hmm. Like I want to get waved to by little kid Alexa Bliss. Like that's cool as hell. But anyway, it's really, I thought Charlotte was great in this, with her facial expressions and her like genuine, like flabbergastedness of this, like for lack of a better word, if that's even a word, probably not flabbergasted.
Not really.
Yes, but it doesn't matter. So she was so flabbergasted by the fact that, Alexa Bliss was coming in there and presenting her with a gift. Like, her facial expressions were really good. And I just thought, like, even the doll actually was more detailed than Lily. I thought that it looked just like Charlotte. Well, minus like the face, like with the teeth and stuff. Obviously. But I mean, like the attention to detail with like the robe and the outfit and the title, like, I thought that was cool. It's obviously, like, eventually this is going to be a slow build, but this is building to Alexa taking the title. And she hit, which I guess is sort of her new, like, besides Twisted Bliss, it's sort of like her new finisher, like Canadian Destroyer that she did.
Yeah, I always hate when people do the Canadian Destroyer like that.
The thing
it's
is...
It's a sunset flip bomb, basically.
Yeah, well, yeah, I always forget, like, what's the difference between like a Code Red and a Canadian Destroyer?
I think it's pretty much the same thing.
I think the Code Red just goes straight into a pin, I think is what it is. But because I was like, oh, did she just do a Code Red? And then I was like, oh no, wait, I watched back Canadian Destroyer. This is what the problem is, though. This is why it looks so weird. I think it is a Code Red, because Code Red, I think, is for short people like the Amazing Red, who actually can't like do the hop off of the Canadian Destroyer because their opponent's usually taller than them, so they kind of just get on their back and then, like you said, do a sunset flip bomb, which is awesome. I like it. I think it's cool. I think it's a good new move for her in her repertoire. Canadian Destroyers are good moves for, like, sort of that anybody can use. Like, it's pretty common knowledge now that, like, Canadian Destroyer, like, you can flip somebody, whether you're 110 pounds or 320 pounds, as long as you could flip them in the air, you're good. I don't know, I like it. I just thought it was different. It was like her first time hitting it, and then she holds up the title, and I enjoyed the segment. There were slight parts of it that, you know, were very, you know, WWE about it.
Of course.
But yeah, like, what are you going to do? That's what we're watching. So, you know, but it was as good as it could be. It was as good as it could be, I felt like, for what they were doing.
Yeah. For me, I think it's a good storyline. I do like what they're doing. I don't like the sunset flip bomb, because I feel like it's a cheap version of doing a Canadian Destroyer. And it's for people who want to do like a wow move, but they can't actually do the real wow move.
I feel like that's more because she's too short, though, not because she can't actually do it. Because even for that, even for the sunset flip bomb, you had to see that she had to jump like a Charlotte Flair that almost has a foot on her.
But then you shouldn't be doing it. You shouldn't be doing it. Because first off, it doesn't, it looks like a cheap version of the move that everyone's like, oh man, like when you see a Canadian destroyer, I mean, how many times I've seen Canadian destroyer being done off the top rope. I've seen Canadian destroyers, but when I see,
I don't care what you say.
When I see these moves,
have you seen a 5 foot person in pigtails do a Canadian destroyer before? Cause I haven't. That's interesting.
No, but that's not a Canadian destroyer.
It's a code red. Same thing.
It's not. It's a sunset flip bomb. That's what it really
is. That's what a code red is, though. They just call it a code red now.
But even when it came to Amazing Red doing it, I didn't really care for it. If I'm wanting to see a wow move, I want to see that Canadian destroyer. If you can't do it because of your height and limitations, hey, you know what? That's fine. But it's my opinion that I don't like seeing the sunset flip bomb because I think that it cheapens the actual move.
I agree, and also it's literally the person taking the move that's doing all the work. You just kind of cling to their back. But it's better than the sparkle splash. Now let's move on. That's if you don't know, if anybody that doesn't know, that is her finisher, the Twisted Bliss. It used to be called Sparkle Splash.
I remember
because she loves sparkles and rainbows and Disney. So all right, let's move on. It was good though. I know Alexa's going to take the title eventually. I do like that they're doing a slow build though, because besides Alexa, Charlotte is who I'm most interested in right now in both women's divisions. So that's it.
All right, my next thing was the big screw up with Nikki A.S.H. and Tamina's match.
Oh, shocker.
No, well, it kind of was. No. It had nothing to do with Tamina.
Oh, no, but who else was there?
Yeah, I know. But the thing was that it had nothing to do with anyone competing in the actual match.
Yeah.
Nikki A.S.H. hits the move. She pins Tamina. Tamina kicks out at 3.5. The match, the referee calls it, raises Nikki's hand. They play Tamina's music, and the ring announcer announces Tamina as the winner.
First of all, worst entrance music ever. Please get rid of it. I would like to never hear it again. First of all, like, I don't even know why they had that cued. Even if she won, they should have played Natalia's music. Her music is terrible.
It was so bad. I'm like, wow. I'm like, someone screwed that up big time.
What it seems like is, I actually don't think it was a miscue on WWE's part. I think it was Tamina was supposed to kick out earlier and miss the count, and the ref is supposed to call it like a shoot match. So the ref just counted 3 and then rang for the bell because he thought that was supposed to be the end of the match. And Mike Rome was not expecting that, and neither was the guy that had the music cued. And and that's just kind of what happened, especially because think about it. When you're a WWE announcer and you have to sit ringside for literally every wrestling show ever, you're not paying attention to the match. You hear the bell ring and you say what you got to say. You know what I mean? Sometimes you're paying attention, but do you really think Mike Rome was paying attention during this Tamina versus Nikki A.S.H. match? I doubt it.
No.
I don't think it was a fault on WWE's part for once. I think it was just on Tamina, I think. But or Tamina and Nikki, to be fair, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely a big screw up.
It was a miscue somewhere that caused the problem.
We already talked about the 8-man tag team match.
Yep.
So I'm not going to even get into that one.
And it was so short too, and like nothing.
I'm going to just say for the next piece, I will say congratulations to Doudrop. One, because she got married over the weekend.
Yep.
So big congratulations to Doudrop. as I do the air quotes. But then I kind of feel like, I guess, congratulations on beating Eva Marie.
Yeah.
That's like sitting there and saying, as like, you know, a 250 pound dude in his 30s, like, I beat a 12-year-old. Yeah. Like, that's like the equivalent.
Yeah.
Because like Eva Marie just like is, I know Eva Marie can actually wrestle. That's the thing. But the way that they portray her and make her do these things in WWE, like, that's the equivalent. It's just like you beat somebody who really just has no.
It's anything. Funny you say that, because I was going to say congratulations to Eva Marie on almost successfully doing wrestling moves and almost taking them correctly.
Almost.
Because let's be honest, this is why people say she can't wrestle, man, because she can't even get picked up in a slam correctly. You know, it's not that hard. Like, I was thinking about it. I went over it in my head today, like, you know, just get on the person's shoulders. And then if you need to get out of the move, you slide off the back of them or you flip over. I mean, come on. It's not that hard to get on a fireman's carry in someone's shoulders. I'm not saying wrestling's easy. It's not at all. But
no.
when you're, it's not at all. I'm not saying that whatsoever. I'm just saying that to get picked up by somebody and then fall down, or to get picked up by somebody and then to hop off their back, is not very hard. And I just feel like there's very simple things. And for the amount of time that she has been doing this and been in a wrestling ring, she's had, God, more wrestling matches than 90% of the women that wrestle for AEW. And she's not up to snuff. I'm sorry, but let's move on. Spent too much time.
Yep. My next thing was the Karrion Kross promo.
Too late.
Yeah, it's definitely a little too late, but here's the thing that I will say, it was a good promo.
It was. I will say that, but I just don't care.
Well, that's the thing. That's the thing that they screw this up with, is this should have been how he came in to WWE. You could have highlighted the destruction that he did in NXT and had him cut this killer promo. And then obviously you need to definitely change the outfit, but you could have had him come in and just start destroying people.
Yeah. Super Shredder's not working for him.
Yeah, no, Super Shredder's definitely not working. But that's what needs to be done.
Mm-hmm.
And they're finally doing the right thing for his character a little bit, at least with the promo side of it. But it was, like you said, it's a little too late.
Exactly. You're right. It should have been done day one. If this was done day one when he came in, instead of losing to Jeff Hardy in 2 minutes because they were mad at Triple H, like, come on.
Yep.
Like, petty stuff, guys.
Yep. I'm going to go straight into the finale of everything. Yep, Lashley and Orton, solid match.
Yeah,
I really enjoyed it. Best match of the night.
Yep, I agree. I completely agree. It's the only one that kept me engaged for like pretty much the whole match.
Yeah. It was definitely the best match of the night.
Yep.
I really liked the chemistry between them in the ring. I like, you know, that, I mean, Orton looked like he would have actually won it. And then Lashley ends up pulling out the win. And then he starts beating up on Orton and Riddle after the match. So I was like, oh, okay. I'm like, he's softening up the champion, so this way they can win the tag team titles. And then Big E comes out to cash in, like he said, he promised he would.
Yep.
And then they actually have a legitimate match between Big E and Bobby Lashley. That's the thing that kind of like bothered me, because I'm like,
yeah,
come on. I'm like, you need to go after him.
Also, you're forgetting about this weird little spot, which watching it back, I looked at it where it was some sort of like, I think it was a shoot thing. Like, people were saying, oh, it was like a kayfabe thing. That was like the reason for Big E to come out. But it really doesn't make any sense the way that they did it.
Bobby Lashley collapsing?
Yeah, yeah. He got hit by the edge of the table. I watched it back. His knee gets hit by the edge of the table and he literally falls. Like, that's a shoot, like, fall. And then he just plays it off, and then eventually he gets feeling back in his leg, and then he starts walking around normal again. Mm-hmm. That was not a part. A lot of people are like, oh, that was like his reason to cash in. Even though when they went to the table, I knew Big E was cashing in, but I thought Orton was going to do his signature, like Orton dump onto the table where he like slams you onto the table, like where he just throws you onto it, basically. I thought that's what he was going to do, and then Big E was going to come out. But I thought it was kind of dumb for him to actually beat up Orton.
I was waiting for Orton to, like, get back up, and as Lashley celebrates in the ring, Orton to hit the RKO, and then yep. Big E cash
in. Or that, yeah, that as well. Also, quick thing I didn't like here, the commentary, I hate. Because how many times have we seen somebody like, I don't know, Carmella, or like The Miz's original cash in, or like Damian Sandow when he pretended to cash in like 15 times?
Mm-hmm.
Before Big E even got to the ring and his music stopped playing, the doofus, whoever he is, lead commentator, goes, oh my God, Big E's cashing in his Money in the Bank right now. And I go, is he? Because he did, which is fine, but don't say that until he hands it to the ref, and the ref hands it to the ref, and then the guy says, okay, he's cashing in his Money in the Bank. Do not say it before he even gets to the ring. Because how many times have we seen somebody run to the ring and then get annihilated before they get to the ring and not get to cash it in? Or they get to the ring and then the champion gets back up and hits him with a move, or like the champion gets back up and then they decide against cashing in. You know, like that's happened so many times, and it's like, dude, you like jumped the gun on that. Also, just quickly while we're talking about that botch, there was a botch of Charlotte Flair as well, where she said that the gift in the box was a doll before it was opened. She goes, I don't need dolls. I got championships, like as if that was the gift that she was being given. Cause she wasn't talking about Lily. She was actually saying like, as if that's what the gift was. So anyway, yeah, that's all. But, I was just really mad about that. It's just attention to detail, dude, please.
I'm with you on that. I'm with you on that. It's so stupid, the things that they do sometimes.
And not a fan of this in general. I don't like, this doesn't make me feel like Big E's credible as a champion. Like, I'm really wondering, besides like we said, the New Day split, like where they really go from here.
Time will tell.
Yeah.
But that finally ends the show. Thank God.
Yes, we are done with this. Over. I'm going to AEW tomorrow.
Yep. Justin will be at AEW Dynamite tomorrow. So he better definitely have good pictures and stuff to show.
I'm going
to
get the scoops. I'm going to be like hiding outside CM Punk's hotel room. No, I'm just kidding.
I want to know everything that happens.
Yeah.
I want the inside scoop on everything.
I'm going to try. My goal, I said, because I was like, I never got to do it when I was a kid because I was too young. But my goal is, I told my girlfriend, is apparently all these people try and sneak backstage. There's all these wrestling stories full of stuff. And I was like, if we can manage to run into, I was like, I don't even care if we run into Brandon Cutler. I was like, I want his autograph if we run into him. I was like, I will get somebody's autograph. I don't care if I got to get like Leva Bates's autograph. I don't care. I will get somebody's autograph. And, you know, that's my goal. And also, if they have a Redeem These Nuts t-shirt, I'm also getting one. But
oh my God. you got to.
Yeah, I really want to.
You really have to.
Yeah, I do. God. I hope to God, because they're building another one. No pun intended. I hope to God that they have a Redeem These Nuts t-shirt. Yeah.
Well, we already know that Lana had done that for Miro. So sorry, I know that's a cheap trick, but I mean, she was the one who posted that on Twitter. Not...
yeah, exactly.
You know, that was an easy layup right there.
It's going to be fun. I'll probably be doing the podcast. Actually, either from New Jersey or Connecticut, because right after that I have a wedding to go to for my sister. So busy week for me, guys. But yeah, I guess that'll end the show for today.
All right, join us Thursday. Until then, I'm author Andrew Hess,
and I'm Justin DeFrancisco. And find out next time what's on tap.